Welcome to the 401k Audit CPA Success Show, where we're 100% focused on helping companies across the United States prepare for their 401k audit. If you have 100 eligible participants in your 401k plan, then this podcast is for you.
Well, welcome everyone to this month's 401k CPA Audit Success Show. I'm Kim Moore, Audit Director here at Anders, and I'm joined again by Karen and Kristen, which if you've been listening to our podcast, you've seen on some previous podcasts. So welcome. Today's topic, we're going to talk about the SECURE Act, which we have talked about before. So if you've been listening to our podcast, this will be a topic that you'll be a little bit familiar with. Just as a reminder or refresher for those who may not remember or may not have listened to some of those previous podcasts, the SECURE Act is actually, it's a congressional act, of course, passed by Congress. And the SECURE is an acronym. It's S-E-C-U-R-E. So it's an acronym for setting every community up for retirement enhancement. You know, how Congress always has to have this big, long name, and then they come up with the acronym, and then they come up with the name to make it fit the acronym. What I think they actually do. But it's a two-part congressional act, because there was actually a SECURE original act that was passed a few years ago. Then the SECURE, what's called SECURE 2.0, which is kind of the second phase of the provisions that Congress wanted to put in place. It was passed back in 2022. So as we're recording this podcast, it's a couple of years old. And it was a big, huge piece of legislation. It has in total something like 90 different provisions in it. But the provisions didn't all become effective immediately. So they are kind of spread out over time. So when we did our original podcast, we focused a lot on those provisions that would become effective right away, those that would have become effective in 23 and 24. As we're recording this podcast, we're at the end of 2024. So we're looking ahead to 2025, particularly those things that are going to come into play for 2025. And then also looking at the end, we're going to be looking a little bit into 2026. By the time we get to 2026, you should have figured out from the SECURE, all of these various SECURE Act pieces, which components that you want to include in your plan, which ones you have to, and we'll talk a little bit about this more in a minute, which ones you have to include, which ones you want to include, because you will have to amend your plan document here coming up towards the end of 2026. So we're coming into a period of time where there are going to be a lot of potential plan document changes again, and then an actual rewrite on your plan document. So you want to make sure that you're prepared. You don't want to do that and then figure out you missed something, because that can cost you and your plan some additional funds. So I want to make sure we try to catch all of this up front. We also just kind of forewarn you, we all are heading into a change in administration here at the federal government level. All signs are pointing to a kind of an awareness that more action needs to be taken in the retirement planning space. Seems like the incoming administration is very open to that. So I would say watch for these podcasts, because we will try to keep you updated as soon as we find out any information on additional potential upcoming changes, because at this point, sitting here anticipating that there's probably going to be even more coming down the pike. So watch the space, watch for our podcasts, and we'll try to keep you as updated as we can. So with that, let's first talk about, I don't care if you want to get us started, if I'm just kind of sitting here thinking, and oh my gosh, you just said there's 90 provisions in here, what are the kinds of things that I should do just in general in evaluating the SECURE Act?
Well, you want to look and see which provisions are mandatory and which ones are optional. As you mentioned, some of them are optional and you don't necessarily have to include those in your plan, but there are mandatory ones that you will have to include. So you want to figure out which ones are mandatory, and if there's going to need to be any kind of changes to the plan document to incorporate those. And then you want to look at the deadlines, because, and we actually have laughed about this in the past amongst ourselves, that the provisions don't come into play at the same time. So you need to look and see which ones are applicable earlier and which ones are applicable later, and then figure out, you know, your plan on how to incorporate each of those, and so that you meet the deadlines for those. Right. Then you're going to want to assign out responsibilities for evaluation and implementation. So if you have a team or something, you know, if it's not just yourself, you have somebody else, some other people that are going to help you, you know, figure out who's going to do what in regards to getting these implemented, or is there going to have to be amendments for the plan? Do you need to bring in the TPA? And make sure that you follow up with those people to make sure that all the required items are actually implemented. And as I mentioned, you probably want to bring in your TPA, your service provider, and they may be able to help you with implementation in some areas. They've probably looked into these already, so they have an idea of what needs to be done, especially if there's going to need to be amendments done. Last time they had an amendment that kind of covered a lot of it, because as we'll discuss later on, there is a deadline to have any amendment for the Secure Act 2.0 done. There's going to be a deadline for that. So last time they kind of had, a lot of them had one that covered everything. There's a good chance that your service provider may have that again for this one. Mm-hmm. And so this is important. As auditors, we know you need to document your work. You want to make sure that you document how you evaluated these, your decision-making process, and how you determined which ones of the optional ones to include or exclude. And that's going to help with your support, your compliance, and you know, in case there's any questions, especially by your auditor, or if some, for whatever reason, the IRS or DOL came in and looked at your plan, you can support what decisions that you made.
Yeah, and I think it's important documentation, because some of these, as Karen mentioned, are optional. So everything that Congress put in there into the Secure Act, even the optional ones, are there for a reason, that they would benefit certain subsets of individuals. And so it's highly likely, if you've got an educated workforce in your company, that they might hear of something and think that the plan automatically would be able to offer that, and maybe you either didn't know about it or you elected not to offer that, and so that could become problematic then if your employee hears about it and they either think it's already there and it's not, or they're wondering why did you not incorporate that. So I think it would be a good idea just to document all of the different optional provisions and your decision, you know, we're not going to do this because of whatever, and have that documented just in case, because I could see that coming up later as lawsuit potential material for someone. If you're really harming them by not adopting something, there's nothing wrong with you're not adopting it. That is totally allowed, but you just want to make sure that you have good rationale behind that to support yourself.
Right, because you never know if somebody does decide to sue, you never know how somebody else is going to interpret that. So you want to make sure you have the rationale down.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It also will help because there are so many different provisions, and as we've said, they come into effect at different times. So, and we're going to talk about the amendment that's required here by the end of the 2026, but you want to make sure when it's all said and done, you only amend once. And so you want to make sure that any optional provisions, number one, that your TPA knows about them, obviously, because they're going to have to administer to whatever options you're picking, but also that you get the plan document changed for all of that. And so you're not incorporating things that you're not actually wanting, or vice versa, that you're leaving out things that you actually did incorporate and you are actually administering. That could be hugely problematic. So just keeping this list will be good. So when you sit down with the TPA and you're either working through the amendment or you're evaluating their proposed amendments, you can check it off to your list to make sure everything's there. So.
Oh, and lastly, I think this was the last one, educate your participants on the changes. You've made all of these changes, and because of these regulations, you want to make sure that your participants are aware of them so they can take advantage of them if they need them. Because some of these are going to are going to allow some of your employees to enter the plan when in prior years they wouldn't have been able to enter the plan. So, you know, you're going to want to let them know that they can take advantage of some of these new provisions. And they're probably going to need help to understand some of the changes. And again, this is another area where your service provider can likely help you. Maybe they'll come in and do, you know, when they get come in for an annual review, you know, talk to your employees. They can maybe do that. They might have some webcasts that you use, or maybe some sort of literature that you can hand out to the participants.
Yeah, and I you know, it doesn't do you any good to go through and do this evaluation and pick out the things that you think are going to be really beneficial to your employee base, and then you don't tell them, because they won't be able to take advantage if you don't tell them that, hey, we made a change. And you know, we all know there are required documents like a summary plan description document that will all have to be revisited and rewritten and then redistributed to the plan documents or to the plan participants. Those usually don't happen right away, though. It takes a while for those to get rewritten and get approved. And so you would be denying an employee the opportunity to take advantage of something for a while, because they wouldn't know about it if you rely on those documents. So I encourage you to, you know, just draft up a real quick email letting everybody know this is going to be available to you, you know, whenever the effective date is of something new. Or if you do regular benefit meetings with your employees, you know, just bring it up then. If you don't tell them, most people, you know, I don't think the average person on the street knows anything about Secure 2.0. So it's only those of us in the benefit world that are really aware of it. So I think you're going to have to explain to your employees mm-hmm. What's coming up. So yeah, good summary of, you know, once you've kind of listened to this podcast and really, if you haven't done that already for the earlier provisions of Secure 2.0, probably good time to kind of catch yourself up. So go out and look at the other provisions that have already been in play and make sure that you're all caught up and you've evaluated everything, because there were optional provisions in 23 and 24 as well. So we're not going to talk about those today. So you need to go back and look at previous documents and podcasts to catch up on those. So now let's dig into 2025 changes. So what's coming that's new and different? I'm going to talk about the very first one. To me, this is the biggest change, and this is one of the bigger things that Secure 2.0, there's two of them, and they were going to talk about these first two here first that I think are the big hitters and the big changes. And this first one we've actually seen a lot in current plans, and this does impact existing plans. So this is not only if it's a new plan, this is even if you have a plan in existence today, this will impact you. So going forward, this begins in January, coming up here in what will be a month as we're recording this podcast. If you have an employee that is at least age 21, so they're age 21 or older, and they have worked 500 hours minimum in each of two successive years, then you need to offer them eligibility into the plan. So it doesn't matter what their classification is. They're an hourly employee, they're salaried, they're part-time, they're considered seasonal, they're whatever classification you put them in, it makes no difference. If they fit that requirement, they're 21 or older, and they've worked 2 years of 500 hours, two consecutive years of 500 hours, you have to offer them participation in the plan.
That's a pretty low threshold, actually. Because you it consider is. Full-time is a little bit over 2,000 hours. So this is about 3 months worth of full-time work. Right. Or maybe working 2 days a week the whole
That's
year.
That's right. And I know a lot of the folks that we've talked to over the years have said, you know, oh, well, part-time, we don't even consider them. They're not benefit eligible. You know, they're just not even in the conversation. Or interns, which interns hopefully wouldn't be with you for 2 years, but they might be seasonal. You know, they're kind of pushed over to the side, or they may have a grouping of employees that are maybe more clerical staff, or maybe they're maintenance staff, or, you know, we've seen different ways that companies have looked at it, but that group over there, oh no, they're not benefit eligible. We don't even consider them. This change invalidates all of that. So you no longer can say that group over there, we're not going to offer them the plan. And you can't change your plan to say, I know that the Secure Act says this, but no, we're going to cause these people to be ineligible. Nope, you're not allowed to do that anymore. So you got to look at all your employees and you've got to keep track of this. You know, I see this as a pretty significant change for a lot of plans, just depending on the types of employees that you have. And because it's hours based, it could be an administrative nightmare to be tracking. Because you may know historically that person doesn't work many hours, but what if all of a sudden they had a big project this year, so they worked a lot of hours, and that lops over into next year. Now they've got 2 years of 500 hours. You've got to be tracking that to know, are they going to, you know, get over that threshold? And then you've got to offer them the plan. And if you don't do this, you don't track it, you don't offer it to them, they come back 5 years down the road and say, hey, I should have been offered the plan. You didn't track this. You didn't monitor it. You didn't offer it to me. You are going to have to make up those contributions. Not like you're going to come 5 years down the road and say, oh, well, I'm going to withhold 5 years of contributions out of your pay and you wouldn't want that. So, you know, it's a wash. We're not doing anything. No, you're going to have to go back and fund 5 years of what would have been contributions, plus any match, et cetera. So this could get very expensive if you ignore it and the employees find out about it. It's probably more than one employee. You know how employees talk. So you could end up, again, I could see this being a class action lawsuit against an employer for ignoring the situation. I think this one will start getting more attention too. So I think employees are going to find out about it. So I would put a big asterisk by this one. You know, for some folks, they're salaried, you know, that it, maybe this won't impact you. But if you have a lot of part-time seasonal type employees, I think this is definitely going to impact you. The other thing I would say is that it comes into effect at the beginning of 2025. And we tried to preach to folks that this was coming. And so in 23 and 24, you should start tracking all of these individuals that fell into this category. Start up a spreadsheet because you've got to keep track of this now going forward for everybody in your company that fits into this situation. And so, you know, they may not work 500 hours this year, but they might next year. And so that you've just got to keep track of it. So if you didn't do that, you may be going into 2025, the beginning of it, and you may need to be offering the plan to folks you don't even know about if you didn't track that, you know, that running right. history going into 2025. Yep. So if, you know, we're trying to get this word out to everybody. So if you have not done that, now is a good time to do it so you can offer the people the plan right away, beginning, you know, whenever they would meet those eligibility requirements. Again, they got to be over the age of 21. You know, and if they elect not to participate, totally, you've met your obligation then. You've offered them the plan. You've still got to keep track, you know, so you still got to keep going. But I would make sure that you offer them the plan, especially in these situations, in some form in writing or confirm in writing that they have declined participation. You know, an email is fine. You know, if you want to have them sign a piece of paper, that's fine. If you've got an automated onboarding type process and you keep track in there, so they're signing, you know, online a document saying, no, I've elected not to participate, that's fine as long as you can provide that proof to anyone who might ask, the employee who might question it later on, any type of DOL investigation that might come up later on, your auditors are going to be asking about, you know, all of these people that tend to look at paperwork. This is going to be an area I could see that could come up, and they could say, well, they never did this. And if you don't have any documentation, then as far as the regulators are concerned, you didn't do this, even though maybe you really did. So again, I think documentation, you know, we always preach documentation, but I think in this case, it's very important. Anything else you guys want to
say? I think education in this area is going to be very important, especially for the part-time employee who's been excluded from the plan. In some cases, maybe for years, maybe they don't even pay attention to what communication is coming out about the plan. So now it's going to be, you know, even more important to educate all employees on this.
Totally agree.
And yeah,
I think, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and like I said, it's really not a lot of hours. If somebody, mm-hmm. I'm just thinking of my own daughter. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. she doesn't meet the age 21, but her hours, she works 2 days during the week, about 5 hours, and then one shift on the weekend. 500 hours easily.
So
I think this is great. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. No, I was just going to say, you think of a lot of people that are working, you know, restaurant work or mm-hmm. They're checkout folks at various retail establishments, even seasonal employees that you mm-hmm. may bring in just for the, you know, the holidays type situation. You'd think, oh, well, they'd never get there. Well, you know, I don't know. They might.
Yeah, I'm thinking a lot of college students that mm-hmm. That they don't work full time, so they never got this before. Once they reach age 21, yeah, they're gonna hit it.
Yeah. I think this is a great thing to implement because, like you're saying, college students are now given the chance to start planning for their future. And I'm noticing more and more of the younger generation in the early 20s are starting to really look at their retirement early on. And so this gives them that opportunity to start investing for their future, you know, while they're still just working part time. So,
and we all know that, you know, you don't have to contribute a lot if you leave it in the plan for a long time or to accumulate a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's a good provision. I think Congress was well-intentioned putting it in. And I think if you handle it properly and you educate your employees, as Krista mentioned, you know, you're really helping. You're helping your employee base a long way. So anyways, that's kind of the big hitter. We're going to talk about a lot of little things here, but that I think is kind of the one of the big things. The other one, Kristen, we'll let you talk a little bit about this one. The other one I think is a big hitter, comes into play for 2025, but only impacts someone setting up a new plan. So a new mm-hmm. 401k plan, a new 403b plan. So if you already have a plan, you can kind of shut your headset off for a little bit. This wouldn't impact you, but only those that are just going to get ready to start up a plan. Now, obviously, it'll be this year and then going forward. So any new plans from 1/1/25 forward, this will be true for.
So any new plans starting in 2025 will now have an auto enrollment feature. So that means all your eligible employees will be automatically enrolled at a minimum of 3%. You can do a higher percentage up to 10%. And then it must have the auto escalation of 1% each year up to a total of 15%. Employees can opt out, but this is where I want to reiterate education. It's so important for your employees because, you know, they need to know that they can opt out prior to that automatic enrollment, because that can create a nightmare with payroll and paperwork later on. And you must incorporate the required notices, obviously, for all your auto enroll plans. You got to put that in place. You got to start communicating to your employees early on about their automatic enrollment. So,
yeah, and the providers will prepare a lot of those required disclosures, but sometimes they fall on you to actually disseminate them. That's kind of it's plan by plan type thing. So I would double check with your provider on whether they have sent those notices out or not. But that's going to become an issue going forward. They will be different disclosures than what you might have seen if you were a participant in the past. There's specific auto enrollment specific notices.
And the other thing too, with the auto enrollment, it may also make your plan now be required to have an audit. So that is something to definitely look at and to keep track of.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, the things that we see here, which is kind of counterintuitive, but employees, when they're given paperwork to sign up for the plan, more often than not, they won't sign it. The converse, if they are automatically enrolled and they're given paperwork or, you know, sign here to opt out, more often than not, they will not opt out. So they won't take whichever action they're required to take. They usually won't do it. Congress's thinking here is that all the new plans being auto enroll, that will get more people saving for their retirement versus forcing people to have to opt in to save for their retirement. Now, as Kristen mentioned, employees can always opt out if they can't afford to save, or maybe they've already saved in another way. They're not forced to, but they need to affirmatively do something to opt out versus, you know, having to do it the other way around, that where they have to actually sign in. The other thing, and we have seen in our experience with plans that have done auto-enroll, because you can do auto-enroll. You don't have to have this to force you to do it. You can have an existing plan and change over to auto-enroll. That would be optional to you. The plans that have had auto-enroll features, we do see the participation rates. They just go through the roof. But if people wait to opt out until they actually see the deduction on their paychecks, then you end up with a nightmare, as Kristen mentioned, because then you end up with a whole bunch of accounts with $5, $10 in them. And then you've got to get those distributed back out to the participants, because you don't want to have hundreds of accounts sitting here that are very tiny amounts. And you got to keep track of all those people, especially if you have a lot of turnover in your employee base. That can become an administrative nightmare. So that's where that education comes in. So again, I see that as a pretty big change, only impacting new plans, but a big change nevertheless. That does impact 403B plans as well. If you happen to be listening to this and you think you might be starting a 403B plan, that applies to them as well. Another couple of kind of quick hitters, catch-up contributions. We've had catch-up contributions for many, many years. That's, of course, you get to a higher age, and the IRS rules allow you to contribute extra into your plan. It's a higher contribution limit, and that additional amount above those, the standard contribution, is called a catch-up. Couple of changes here. Originally, we had 2025 as the start date that if you were a highly compensated individual, and I'm not going to go through the dollar amounts involved because those would change year to year. So you'd want to double check on the IRS website for what that dollar amount is. But once an individual would hit that higher dollar amount and they want to make that catch-up contribution amount, they would have to make it as a Roth contribution. Only Roth, not pre-tax, would be allowed for those. That was actually changed because so many of the providers were screaming that this was going to be a huge administrative change in their systems to be able to administer this. So Congress came back and gave a little bit of leeway. And so you now have until 2026 to implement that for your plan. Still a provision. You'll still have to do it. You just have a little bit of extra time to do it. Could do it early if you want to, but you don't have to do it until 2026. So just wanted to let everybody know that don't panic. If you're not ready, you've got a little bit more time, but do start working on it, because it will go into effect. And I don't imagine they will extend it any further. So probably by 2026, you're going to need to be ready to handle that. They also put a provision in. Now, this is optional. So for those folks, it's a very probably small group of folks that are aged 60 to 63. So there are people on the lower end that could make catch-up contributions. There are people on the higher end, so older than 63, that might be making, they might still be contributing and might be making catch-ups. This doesn't affect any of them. It's only those 4 years. I'm not sure the rationale on that part of it. I could understand
waiting till 60. I don't understand why cutting it off after 63. That part doesn't make sense to me, but okay.
Yeah. As we've said before, don't ask me to explain the federal government here. We don't have enough time for that. So, but anyways, beginning 1/1/25, that group in there, 60 to 63 in your employee base, so they are allowed this is optional. You have to kind of negotiate this into your plan, that they could make an increased catch-up contribution up to $10,000 or 50% of whatever the 2024 limit was. So that gives them a little bit of even more space. I think the theory here is that you're nearing retirement, but you're probably not ready. Most people are not going to be actually retiring at 60, 61 in there. So we're going to give you a little bit more room because you're thinking about it, and you might really want to be pushing to get that last little bit into your retirement account. I think that's the thought here. Mm-hmm. But again, this is optional. So
But cutting it off at 63 makes no sense then, because what if somebody got started late and they really are trying to get money in there?
I don't know the answer to that one. I thought it was very strange too, and I think it becomes problematic just because it's age based, and so different people obviously are going to turn these ages at different times. So you can't just say, "Oh, at this point, you know, as of 1/1, we're doing." It is optional though. So two caveats: if you think, "Oh, that's just too much work, I don't want to do it," you don't have to. You're totally fine to just ignore this and not do it. And if you do want to do it, you need to make sure that you've thought through the ramifications of doing it. And obviously, I don't know if you really want to do this if you've got a very young employee base. It doesn't help them. Most of your people are young. So something to think about, but it isn't, you know, it's optional. So we have account portability as our next kind of topic. I don't want to go into a whole lot of details here because I think this is something you really need to talk to your service provider about. But one thing Congress has been concerned about is that folks that don't have a lot of money in a 401k with their employer, and they change employers, so I'm moving jobs from employer A to B, I'll just cash out my 401k. It's too much work to try to move it. It's not enough money. I'll just cash it out. Now, causes a lot of problems because obviously that money isn't staying invested, which leads to the long-term problem of people don't have enough money to save for retirement. It also causes additional taxes for the person because that money becomes taxable when they take it out, and they may not have planned for that, and so that can become problematic. Research that I was doing as I was prepping this said around 25% of the non-retired folks that are working don't have any savings for retirement. Two-thirds of those that are working, not retired yet, said that they know they don't have enough saved. So Congress is trying to address that. We all know Social Security has got its issues. So relying on Social Security as your sole source of support once you cannot work any longer or you officially want to retire is probably not a good strategy. So Congress is trying to put in play things in these laws to help you to be able to save, and they want you to keep that money in. So again, on this particular topic, I would check with your provider to see what options you have available. Most companies have employee turnover, and so this, I think, will impact everybody. So I will double check on that. Same thing here on required minimum distributions. The rules on the RMDs keep changing. This starts affecting people once they get above the age of 70, and that required age keeps changing. Mm-hmm. So again, not knowing when you're going to be listening to this podcast again, if you feel like you have folks in your plan that fall into this category, they're over age 70, regardless of whether they're still working or not. But as you start having aging folks in your plan, I would check with your provider on this particular area, because there may be things that you need to be communicating out to those affected employees. So those are a couple of quick hitter things. Karen, you want to talk a little bit about, there's a long-term care option here that I think is a nice one to talk about.
Yes. With this option, the participant can take a penalty-free withdrawal of $2,500 per year to pay for long-term care insurance. It's optional. So this is one that you'll need to amend your plan in order for your participants to take advantage of it. And it's effective for distributions made after 12/29/2025. So you'll want to go ahead and evaluate this provision now, especially since you're going to have to amend for it. But it is something that would be available for your participants.
Mm-hmm. And I think long-term care is a nice offering. I know a lot of people are interested in that. So that's something you might want to be kind of thinking about, because that would be a nice option. Some of the last, I know we're running long on time here. I'm going to just hit a couple of these really quick, but we mentioned earlier in the podcast that the plan amendments for the Secure Act 2.0 are due by the end of 2026. So 12/31/2026. That sounds like a long time, but as we all know, time flies. And faster than a lot of us would like. So there's a lot of work that you need to do to make sure that you handle this appropriately. And what usually happens, again, you want to check with your service provider, but these kinds of changes, your providers will usually do those for free. No guarantees. I mean, they can always charge for whatever they want, but a lot of times they'll do this as part of your package that you're paying for. And so that's a one-time shot for you to incorporate anything else that you might want to get put in there and not have to pay separately for it. Usually if you come along and you say, hey, provider, I want to add, you know, auto enrollment to my plan. I've never had that before, but I want to do that. You have to pay to get that plan document and summary plan description changed and the administration changed. And it can be quite expensive. So this is a good time. Number one, make sure that you're getting your plan updated for the Secure Act, because that is required. Make sure that as your provider is doing the changes, that you're making sure everything got incorporated that should have, and all those optional things that you elected are included and or not included, you know, if you didn't elect them, and then anything else that you might want to incorporate. It's a good time to talk to your provider, kind of get teed up for that, because that work will be starting probably late 25 and into 26 to make sure that it gets done before the deadline. So now is a good time to be thinking about that and making sure that everything gets incorporated in it. And then also getting ready for your employee education that we've kind of talked about. And the summary plan descriptions will be revised and coming out, and that may cause, you know, additional discussion with employees. So those are all good things to talk about. The last thing I wanted to mention, and I'm going to run through these real quick. So if you have any questions, let me know. But the Secure 2.0, the first batch of stuff that got implemented, and that was some of which was optional that we talked about in prior podcasts. We said at the time that, you know, Congress puts these rules out, but it's up to the IRS and DOL to actually implement them and to figure out how are you going to administer that within a plan. And some of it was kind of complicated. And so the IRS has issued during 2024 some additional information in the following areas I'm going to run through. So if these are areas that pique your interest, I would go check the IRS website and look on these specific topics, and you should find IRS bulletins on each one of these items. And that will give you specific instructions if you want to implement them within your plan, or it'll give you more information if you're thinking about doing that. So auto enrollment was one, which was an earlier conversation, and the financial incentives. There were incentives to folks to start up a plan if you didn't have one, and so there was additional guidance put out on that. There were provisions for distributions related to personal distributions, so kind of saving account type accounts you could put into your plan, as well as domestic abuse victim distribution. So additional guidance put out around that. Required minimum distributions. I think you're going to be hearing a lot about that over the next couple of years because they keep changing it. The matching student loan repayment program. So this was where you're going to take an employee is making a student loan repayment to wherever they took the loan from, whether that's a bank or maybe a federal type loan repayment. And you're going to match that. So it's a way for them to be making contributions that they may otherwise not be able to make because you're considering that loan repayment as a contribution. So additional guidance issued around that. This automatic portability that we talked a little bit about, where you can move your account from one employer to another as you're changing positions. Additional guidance given out on that. There was also additional guidance on purchasing annuities inside a plan. That's been kind of a hot button topic for a while. So the IRS gave some new guidance on that. The last thing I had on my list to just mention that was a part of Secure 2.0, the DOL was given the mandate to set up a database to track what are called lost participants. And we've talked about lost participants on this podcast before. So those are participants, folks are still in your plan, they still have an account balance, but they've left your employ. And maybe they left 10 years ago and you don't know where they are. You don't have any good contact information. You can't get a hold of them. You want them to take their money out, but you just can't get a hold of them. Maybe you've even sent them a hard copy check and it never got cashed because it went to the wrong address. There is now a database up and running, and there are there's more information available, again, on the IRS website. I would go out and check that out. You are required as a plan sponsor to make every attempt to get that money to the actual plan participant that is owed that money. And so this is a mechanism to try to help you with that. So that is out there and available now. And I would encourage you to go check that out. And probably more will be coming out about that over the next several months, because that's something they really want to be pushing. I know we ran through that really quickly. There was a lot there. Karen, Kristen, any last thoughts before we kind of wrap this up?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, reiterate, make sure your documentation is in place as you go through this process, because your auditors will be asking for it. So make sure you have copies of all your amendments, your plan, your new plan document, your summary plan description. And this is a good time to really start looking at processes to make sure you have the processes in place to track eligibility, you know, and if you don't, put them in place now and do a look back over 2023 and 2024, because you're going to have to, and your auditor is going to be asking for that. So
absolutely. We're going to be asking whether you've got it or not. We're still going to be asking.
And keep board minutes. Keep board minutes on everything you discuss as your management team in regards to all this.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned this, because I just redid, we have a questionnaire we send to all of our auditees every year. And I just updated the questionnaire for next year, and this went on it about Secure 2.0, because we're going to be getting to that point where it's going to become a question, and that will become a problem. If you do not update your plan, that is going to become an issue that will come up in your audit if you have not done so. So yeah, very good. Very good note there, Kristen. Anything else anybody's got? Uh-oh. Okay, well, we want to thank you for listening to this month's podcast, and we will be getting our notes and everything together to get started in the new year with some new thoughts, and we'll be trying to take a look at the new administration and what's coming out of that with regard to your benefit plan. So thank you, everyone, for listening.
Enjoy this podcast? Visit our website at anderscpa.com/401k to get more tips and strategies for achieving 401k audit success. We're here to be a resource with ever-changing rules and regulations.